Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast, starring Matt Levy and Mike Staub. We love video games and have embarked on a journey to index the greatest video games of all time into our very own Hall of Fame. Here's the show. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Matt, how's it going? I'm happy to be good. Good to hear. What were you saying? I cut you off.
I'm doing great. I got my short shorts on. I got a gun strapped to each thigh. I got my hair in a ponytail and I'm good to go.
Wow, that's impressive because I'm afraid to wear short shorts in public. So I'm very impressed. And actually, I'm going to give you credit on that one, man.
I'm very comfortable. Well done. In a podcast setting, I'm very comfortable wearing short shorts, Mike.
Yeah, I totally get it. This is the perfect setting for something like that. So yeah.
But if people didn't get the subtle hints, Mike, we are talking about a game that is rich with impact, rich with legacy.
Yeah.
And it is the 1990 series Tomb Raider. Mike, what immediately comes to mind when you think about the original classic Tomb Raider?
So when I think of the original Tomb Raider game, I don't always have the best memories. I'm not saying that because I think they're bad or whatnot. I think this game is one of those games, and the first handful of these games, like the first like four or five of them, I feel like Tomb Raider was more of something that people knew of due to its coverage in magazines, websites, game store advertisements than maybe playing the game. And maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't really know too many people that were super into Tomb Raider. And that's anecdotal. That's from my own experience. And while what I find funny is that Tomb Raider obviously became synonymous with the PlayStation in the late 90s, it's actually originally a Sega Saturn game.
And that surprised the heck out of me in preparation for this. I thought of this game as a PS1 game through and through. It actually launched in some territories weeks before the PS1, Mike.
Yeah, it's actually, released a little bit before the PS1. And that's what I find most intriguing about that is that the Sega Saturn was terrible at 3D graphics. Now, this comes out October 24th, 1996 on the Sega Saturn. A few weeks later, it's on the PlayStation 1. When we talk about 1996 and we talk about games, we also have to talk about the big one, the big elephant in the room, which is Mario 64. And Mario 64 comes out in North America in September. So like a month before Tomb Raider comes out. So you kind of have this kind of Tomb Raider versus Mario 64 kind of with like these 3D games. And Tomb Raider has a lot of problems. If I sat down and played Mario 64 today, the camera's not great. Yeah, it's got some weird issues with the jump to 3D. But you can kind of figure out your way around Mario 64. Tomb Raider, the whole tank control aspect of how this game operates, the buttons really don't make sense in what you do. I really never had an idea of what I was doing.
I also find the two stances that you have to take your guns and put them away to do different mobility was kind of an odd thing, Mike.
Yeah, it works in Resident Evil because Resident Evil has that fixed camera and you're kind of fixed in a position like that. I kind of get where you aim and then ready and aim. But in Tomb Raider, I don't know what they were trying to do. But I think what Core had on their hands, and that's Core Design, who was an English developer of the 80s and 90s, developed a lot of games for the Amiga, like every company out of the UK did, because the Amiga was a giant thing over in the UK. It wasn't really that big over in the States. We actually have, I think, a fully fledged out Amiga at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. So if you want to come and see that. But Core Design was a English company, primarily worked with Eidos Interactive, as Eidos had purchased them at some point. And they are the people behind Tomb Raider. And I feel like with Tomb Raider, it wasn't necessarily about the gameplay that was pulling people in. I think Tomb Raider with Lara Croft as your lead was kind of the first time where they were going after a very particular audience of people to get interested in this game. And it's definitely what the PlayStation was going for. I know it's a Sega Saturn game first, but this was what the PlayStation was going for. And Lara Croft immediately became an iconic character. And it's very rare that a character becomes that iconic and that recognizable that quickly. But Lara Croft, her design and what they were kind of pushing were kind of like this teenage, kind of late 90s, extreme sports kind of vibe. Like the kids that grew up playing Sega Genesis were moving on now, and they were 14 and 15 and 16 and 17 years old. And they wanted to play something that felt more, I guess, at the time, mature. And you had Resident Evil in 1996. You have Tomb Raider in 1996. These become like the quintessential experiences of that point in time. You have games like Twisted Metal, right? That just have this kind of mature kind of vibe to it. Mortal Kombat was still kind of riding the high of being like this greedy, darker, more quote unquote mature, even though I think Mortal Kombat is incredibly immature with the way in which it presents itself, especially in this era. But we were looking at this kind of late extreme 90s kind of thing. And I think Lara Croft is kind of one of the quintessential game characters to come out of that period. Now, obviously over the years, she's gone through a couple of renaissances, right? Lara Croft is still around, and her visual, her design has changed a little bit here and there to I think be a little more in tune to what gamers are looking for in today's day and age. But I think at the time you have this woman she's a little bit based on Indiana Jones. She's a little bit based on Tank Girl, which is a movie it was a comic book first, kind of like this Riot Girl punk rock kind of vibe. And also they used the movie Hard Boiled as kind of probably because she shoots two guns. Like that's probably where it comes from. Like that's that's like the thing with it's got kind of this like gritty shooting two guns, jumping around kind of thing. And these movies, this movie, Indiana Jones and stuff like Tank Girl kind of all blend into one. These three movies kind of have this vibe, and it really is all of that, right? It's really all of that late 90s kind of thing. And when you look back at it now, you really do understand how different and how important it was when it had released, especially as one of the first really big 3D games that kind of hit the space in the late 90s.
Yeah, no, I think everything you said, Mike, as you always do in your introductions, phenomenal, and I agree. But I think what you said there is how important this is to realize that it is a 3D adventure game. The comparison to Mario 64, because it came out the same year, I understand. But I think then their level design and gameplay are so fundamentally different.
Oh yeah,
we can give Tomb Raider and Lara Croft a little bit of a pass because the developers said, and I found this very interesting, they thought that third-person action adventures were very underrepresented, and they were like a lot of shooters at this point were Doom, were first person. You didn't see a lot of third-person 3D action adventure games. This is probably, if not the first noteworthy, one of the first noteworthy third-person 32-bit action adventure games. And I give it a lot of credit for that, even though, like you said, some of the controls, some of the level design, some things were not fantastic at that time and still today are not fantastic.
Yeah. And they really didn't have anything to work with, right? Like what else, like you said, if this is like the first game or one of the first games to kind of tackle this style, you really didn't have anything to base it on. They were
Max Payne is years after this and probably heavily influenced by Tomb Raider. And there's countless others, 3D action shooters. Devil May Cry was probably not long after this, has some influence, I would think.
I would think Tomb Raider kind of influenced the genre as a whole moving forward.
Yeah.
I would definitely put games like Max Payne, Grand Theft Auto 3 to a degree.
Yeah.
Stuff like you said, Devil May Cry. I think you're 100% right there. I think that they were all kind of pulling something from what Tomb Raider had done, especially by the time we get to like Tomb Raider 2 and Tomb Raider 3, games that are a bit better than the original Tomb Raider. And the original Tomb Raider, like you said, you bring up Doom, right? You bring up shooters like Doom and Wolfenstein and other games like that. And when you play Tomb Raider, the original Tomb Raider, and you compare it to something like Doom, you look at it, you're like, yeah, there's something similar going on here. The way like the switch puzzles work and the way the environments are very tight and they're very claustrophobic and they're very kind of short and narrow. And you get these open spaces that you can walk around in and explore, but like, it's not really like an open thing, right? Even the level length is very similar to Doom. Like as you're going through section by section of the original Tomb Raider, you're kind of playing through stages like you would in a game like Doom.
Yeah.
And it feels like that. And that's cool. And it was very, looking back in 96, it was very, very, very new and interesting. And when you don't have anything to base it on, right? And you're just trying to figure out, oh, what controls would make sense for this game? I totally get why some of the controls might be a little wonky. And obviously, if you're playing it in 2024, I highly suggest buying the trilogy pack, even though the trilogy pack still has some issues in terms of its controls. You can look at it, looking at Tomb Raider, you can understand why it might have been taken as such a big moment at the time. One, you have a human character.
Yeah.
Who we know the name of her. And when I say human character, for 1996 graphics and visuals, if you look at the box art on Tomb Raider, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, this looks quote unquote fairly realistic at the time.
If you were coming from Super Nintendo or Genesis,
yeah,
this was mind blowing.
Because there were other games that had like real people, quote unquote, humans as the lead characters. Like if you were to play like a Street Fighter game or a Mortal Kombat game.
But mostly I feel like we got mascots.
Yeah.
A lot of animals at this point.
A lot of mascots, a lot of animal stuff. Even contemporary on the PlayStation, stuff like Crash Bandicoot is also part of this whole equation here for the late 90s on the PlayStation 1. And what was even different about Tomb Raider was that Tomb Raider made it as though, in a very cinematic way, let us know that the game was featuring or starring Lara Croft, right? It wasn't the Lara Croft game. It wasn't Tomb Raider. It was Tomb Raider featuring Lara Croft. So like they were introducing us to this character. And I think ultimately in the end, the legacy of Tomb Raider is, yes, being one of the first 3D third-person action games, but also being the game that gives the video game fabric, right? The quilt of it all gives us Lara Croft as a character who is still around today and still making some pretty solid games.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is one of the few instances where the impact and legacy of the character in the series might actually be bigger and better than the games itself.
Yeah.
Because Lara Croft, you talked human. Let's just talk female. Let's talk about a woman for a second.
It's a woman too, right? It's not.
I mean, how few noteworthy known female video game characters are there besides Metroid, who people don't always identify as a woman? Some people, the average person might not know Metroid's Samus is a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you had Mortal Kombat fighters, right? You had a couple of Mortal Kombat fighters, but this time you have Chun-Li and Cammy out of Street Fighter. And I think by 96, you had Street Fighter Alpha. So there are more from Street Fighter
Alpha. But you had more stuff like Princess Peach and Zelda that were damsels in distress.
Yeah.
These secondary characters, this was still uncommon.
Yeah. I think that's a big moment too, is that you have a woman as the lead. She's tough. She's an explorer. She is good at what she does. And I think ultimately she's incredibly interesting. Mm-hmm. And I love this character archetype, kind of the adventurer, Indiana Jones style character, I think is awesome. And Tomb Raider and Lara Croft herself would go on to influence not only her own series, right? As the series continues to go and continues to make new games, but this became pretty much super influential to some of the other bigger series of all time, most notably Uncharted, who doesn't feature a woman lead character, but there are many like really great women in that series, and also Uncharted: The Lost Legacy. I do believe the character Chloe in Uncharted is mm-hmm. pretty much an analog for Lara Croft. She's also of English descent,
and even that before that, and I agree, the Uncharted influence is absolutely there, and obviously Indiana Jones through both of them.
Yeah,
I think the games Dead to Rights was a popular series on Xbox time, and then also you have the Punisher video game that came out around that timeline. Both have that third person shooter persona that this game does so well. Now, Mike, something this game does that we talk about from time to time is the idea of atmosphere. And I think that's something you can also credit to this game, because the level design, hit or miss, you could say, not always the best. And it was, trying to do a lot in 1996, but it did do a good job of capturing atmosphere of being this woman adventurer in a cave, solving these puzzles. There was definitely a feel to the game.
Oh, 100%. And at the same time, that feel is kind of enhanced by the lack of music until you get into a moment that they hit you with the music. So I actually think that's also really cool for the atmosphere and the ambiance of the whole thing. You are alone in this kind of whatever kind of tomb you are, ultimately looking for what, the Scion of Atlantis,
mm-hmm.
walking around or running around the tombs, trying to not get hit with traps and trying to get through all these things. It's pretty interesting to see how it's so quiet. You fire up the game and it's quiet, but then eventually you'll hear sound and music, and it's usually when you have to shoot or fight something, whether it be like a wolf or a bear or whatever.
I love that you brought this up, and I read that it was because of lack of budget, but I actually think it actually helps the game that there's not a musical track playing on loop throughout the whole game. Instead, you're right, it does help with the ambiance, that the musical cues only are selective, and then you're hearing her grunting or her sighing or the animal noises or the gunshots. It does create more of this intensity. It's cool.
Yeah, it makes things tense for sure. And it really just kind of ups the anxiety level. And I think it's a good, if it's a budgetary thing, okay, great. Well, then it worked out for you creatively.
Yeah.
Because I find it very interesting that, hey, there's no sound. There's no music. And then all of a sudden you'll get like this kind of swell of music as like, you got to fight a pack of wolves. And I do like too that they've kind of continued with stuff like this in the future Tomb Raider games, where you have to fight like a bear, or you have to fight like a jungle cat or something like that. And it's really great to see where the groundwork for that kind of laid itself down.
Well, Mike, we did give this game praise, and you just brought something up that irks me in a lot of video games.
Yeah.
A pet peeve of mine is I don't like being given fodder of enemies to fight. I don't like fighting bugs. I don't like fighting wolves. I don't like fighting bats. And I don't like fighting your generic robots that some games have. And this game follows one of those tropes by giving you wolves, bats, apes, dinosaurs. And I understand you're in the caves, you're in tombs, it does make sense. But for something about, I feel like these type of games, I guess they didn't want to make her a mass murderer, is sort of what I gathered early on in these games. They didn't want her to kill hundreds and hundreds of humans.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you feel about just shooting down a bunch of wolves and different animals.
Yeah, I think it's I don't know. I don't really mind it that much.
Uh-huh.
The bats are annoying. I think fighting anything like the bats in this game is always a pain. It's like the crows in Resident Evil. They're just stupid and they're annoying. I do like fighting a dinosaur. I will say I have a soft spot in my heart for fighting dinosaurs in these games. So I do kind of dig that. And later on in the later Tomb Raider games, which is really funny, it's like you almost don't fight animals at all. You almost exclusively kill people.
Yeah.
So Lara Croft goes from being like this adventurer kind of spelunker fighting animals and stuff like that, like angry animals and stuff like that, to being a pretty efficient mass murderer. by the time you get to Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, she's kills people with anything she possibly can get her hands on. And I find that strange.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean,
how many video games? We get immune to that sometimes.
Yeah. It's like you look at that and you're like, oh, how many people has Lara Croft killed? Oh, hundreds.
Hundreds. So, Mike, something else that I would say is a glaring problem with this game back when it came out and tremendously more so today, and we need to point it out, is this grid-based level design or these tank controls where Lara can walk, jump over gaps, but you have to do it at these strange angles. Did you want to kind of talk about the frustrations of this?
Yeah, it's really tough. How many times playing this game on the original PlayStation did I run into a moment where I hit the wrong button and did like a side flip that went the wrong way and then I died or something like that? Or I did a hop and it didn't hit the thing and I missed the puzzle and I get through the door, or I jumped just too far because her jump's like, it's not floaty,
no,
but it is not precise. It's like a lot of this game holds it back. A lot of this game holds it back. If this game was made 5 years later, I think that many of these problems would not be there. But then at the same time, I don't think Lara Croft would be as iconic. So it's one of those things where it's just like, you kind of got to deal with the generation you're raised in. And
it did a lot of things first, but maybe not well.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you could tell they're still clearly trying to work here. And coming from the UK, they played a lot of PC stuff. If you think about it, this almost does feel like it's a PC game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as you stated, she can shimmy along ledges. She can swim through bodies of water. Certain button configurations, you can do a handstand and do a swan dive. There is actually a good amount of stuff she can do, but it never really feels fluid or natural. I talked earlier about the two different stances, one with the weapons drawn. Mm-hmm. Once she's hands-free and allows you to do different things as far as your mobility. And I just love the fact that you have unlimited ammo. So when your gun's out, your two pistols, you could just, Mike, you could just shoot forever. I mean, it's not like Resident Evil where you're worried, I gotta be careful with my bullets.
No conservation of ammo whatsoever. Shoot.
That's the hard boiled probably influence there.
I think so. The Hong Kong action movie. Yeah. I mean, you gotta give credit where credit's due. Also, Hard Boiled rules, and you should probably watch it.
Oh, awesome.
You know what's funny? Hard Boiled, I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off there, Matt. My bad. But I do want to say Hard Boiled is a film that is massively influential to video games. Not only is it really influential to Tomb Raider, the original protagonist for the original concept for Final Fantasy VII, I believe the character's name was Hard Boiled Detective Joe, and it was supposed to take place in New York City. So we talked about this a few weeks ago when we did the Final Fantasy thing, but yeah, I think this movie should be a movie that should be watched by video gamers because it seems like it's one of the, and it's a John Woo movie.
Yeah,
so John you know, Woo. You know, it's good.
If you like Face Off, I believe that's also one of his flicks.
Yeah, John Woo rules, and some of his movies are Face Off, obviously, and he also did I think the second Mission Impossible, but like Hard Boiled, Hard Target, Face Off, these are all just wacky fun movies, and you should watch them.
Absolutely. I do agree with that. If you're a gamer and you like action,
yeah,
you can't do much better than those movies.
Definitely not.
Mike, we have to talk about some of the sequels that followed this game. They went hard. It was like year after year. They were getting almost yearly, getting releases from Tomb Raider 2, 3, all the way up through the one that kind of shut down Tomb Raider for a bit was Angel of Darkness. These games were getting rushed out after the success of this game. Anything to mention on some of these sequels that's noteworthy?
I know that most people really like Tomb Raider 2. I feel like Tomb Raider 2 was kind of like Uncharted 2 or Assassin's Creed 2, where like the first game was doing some stuff. And you know what? Probably also Resident Evil 2. I feel like a lot of these PlayStation 1 era games released first games in the series that were new and different and innovative. But it took them to get to the second one before they really figured out what the game was supposed to be about. So the sequels that this game came out with they get progressively better, I believe. Like, I know the original Tomb Raider is good. Good's a stretch. It was important and unique and groundbreaking for the time.
Yep.
Tomb Raider 2 is usually considered the best of that first original trilogy. Tomb Raider 3 is probably about the same quality. of Tomb Raider 2, but obviously isn't doing anything too crazy. And then you get like these weird games in the middle, like The Last Revelation, and then you get Tomb Raider The Prophecy, which was, I think, actually developed by Ubisoft. And then you get Tomb Raider Angel of Darkness, which is bad. Yeah. And that comes out in 2003, and that's a terrible game and kind of represents the death of Tomb Raider at that time.
And I think they were crunching hard to get these games out. And I think at that point, you're not doing it for the right reasons.
Well, between 96 and 2003, okay? And I'm not going to count Curse of the Sword, which is the Game Boy game.
Mm-hmm.
But we have Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider 2, Tomb Raider 3, The Last Revelation. So that's four games. Then we have Tomb Raider Chronicles. So this is one, two, three, four, five games in 4 years, 96, 97, 98, 99, and then 2000. So five games in 5 years. And then Tomb Raider 2 is 2002 is Tomb Raider The Prophecy. So that's the sixth game in 6 years. And then you have Tomb Raider Angel of Darkness, which is the seventh game in 7 years. They were putting out pretty much a game a year for Tomb Raider. And they pretty much only really skipped 2001. Then the game takes a 3 year break. The series takes a 3 year break. And then we get Tomb Raider Legend, which people like.
Yeah.
People like Tomb Raider
Legend. Crystal Dynamic. Legend and Anniversary are good games.
Yeah. And now these come off. Now these come out. Now, granted, Tomb Raider The Prophecy and Tomb Raider Angel of Darkness release after the release of the first Angelina Jolie film, which is one of the first real.
Yeah. When you think back on video game movies, people didn't hate on Tomb Raider 1, the movie, the Angelina Jolie. The sequel, I think it was Cradle
of Life.
Of life didn't do as well critically or box office, but the first film actually did a pretty good job of transitioning.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a movie that's kind of like, I believe the first movie was a hit. And I think people liked Angelina Jolie as Lara Croft. Like, it makes sense. Like, you look at Lara Croft, you look at Angelina Jolie in 2001, it's like, okay, yeah, that fits. And then we get games that I think that were influenced by the movies a little bit with Tomb Raider Legend, mm-hmm. Tomb Raider Anniversary, which is a remake of the original game.
Yep. Yep.
Which is one I actually want to go back and play more because it's a better version of that game. And then we had Tomb Raider Underworld, and then that series dies.
Yeah.
Like, because Underworld's not very good.
Nope.
And then we get like the top down Tomb Raider game, the Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, which is actually really good.
Interesting games.
Different.
Yeah.
Different. Lara Croft games, because that's what those are, right? Those are Lara Croft games. Those are actually really cool, but Tomb Raider takes a 5 year break. And then we get what we call the reboot series, where it's a darker, grittier, more realistic version of Tomb Raider. And we get Tomb Raider. Then we get Rise of the Tomb Raider in 2015. So we have Tomb Raider in 2013, Rise of the Tomb Raider in 2015, and then Shadow of the Tomb Raider in 2018. And those games are really good, in my opinion. I think all three of those games are really solid action adventure games. But in terms as like the sequelization of this series, it gets really good. Like the second game and the third game get solid, and then they kind of waver for a bit, and then they kind of get good again, and then they waver for a bit, and then they get good again. So I think that the thing with Tomb Raider is that I think it's a character that's always going to be in the mix because they know of the recognition of Lara Croft both by name and visually with the audience. And with video games in general, she is as important to the fabric as any of the other video game leading
characters. Yeah, the obviously the most modern movie, the Alicia Vikander.
Vikander or whatever?
Yeah, I believe that film was almost based on the reboot series, had more influence from those games where it's more like survival as far as situational rather than just being a straight up shooter.
Yeah, she even looks more like that version of Lara Croft too. It's almost like they probably made those games in with the mindset that they were going to make a movie like that.
What I found interesting was the original game back in 1996 was one of the best-selling games on the Saturn and the PS1, selling 7 million units, and actually remained the best-selling title in the series until the 2013 reboot.
That's pretty crazy, but I do believe it because it was everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere at that time. You could not escape Tomb Raider games. Even though it was like Tomb Raider games to me were like the comic books I didn't read.
All those sequels started blurring together for me because I was just I wasn't a giant Tomb Raider fan. So when I saw Chronicles and 2 and 3, and I started seeing all these in the shelves and in the game stores,
yeah,
they started to kind of blur together because how often these new games came out.
Yeah, no, 100%.
There was very little separation.
Yeah, it was almost too much. And I think that's part of the reason why the series does kind of get into a weird kind of position early on, because you're like, all right, what Tomb Raider game am I playing? And then when you get to like the first like sequel reboot series that comes out in 2000, then they're starting to remake them in that period too. So it's just like, I don't know. If someone was to come to me and go, all right, I want to get into Tomb Raider, where do I start? Maybe the anniversary version, maybe that one.
I think the 2006 and 7 games, Legend and Anniversary, are significantly better than the games that predated it.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of hands-on time with the current remasters that came out a few months ago, so I can't speak on their behalf, but the original trilogy was remastered with updated visuals, and I heard controls, so I can't speak on that.
Yeah, you can use modern controls and modern visuals. It's easy to snap back and forth between the two. But at the heart, there's still very much those first games.
Well,
and yeah.
This first game, Mike, went on to win many industry awards. It is considered one of the most important and greatest video games ever made. Now, Impact definitely playing a part there.
Yeah.
And it was very highly reviewed. I mean, it did really good with magazines, and that's basically where we read our reviews back then.
Yeah.
It's important, but as we both stated, I think its impact and legacy kind of outshines the actual quality of the games.
I think you're right. I think it's more about the iconography of what Tomb Raider is and the character is, for sure.
I'm interested to see, whether it's movies or games, what the character does next, because that reboot series was completed with the previous trilogy, with the conclusion. I wonder where they go next. Do they continue that style and type of game? Do they go back to something a little more shootery? I'm curious to see where they go. Will they try different genres with the character, kind of like those Lara Croft series, which were kind of more top-down?
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see where, because this series probably is not dead.
No, definitely not dead at all. I do think that the next move for them is to probably do something that is probably in the vein with what they've done the last few games, and probably modernize and update a little bit. I think because the reboot series of Tomb Raider, the 2013 series, at the end of the first game, you get Lara Croft's dual sidearms. You get the dual guns. You get the dual pistols. Like, the last thing you do in the game is you pick up the two guns and you shoot, you fight the last boss with them. I think that because they're branding it as a reboot series, I think with the next game, we might get a standard, like, this is Lara Croft. She's been Lara Croft for a long time now. She knows what she's about and she's really good at this. And I feel like it'll probably work a little like Uncharted, but they might have more of the shooter kind of stuff to it because people do like that type of thing. And they've also just recently come up with a unified visual style for Lara Croft that, I guess it's Crystal Dynamics now, as owned by Embracer Group, that they know what she's going to look like. And like, this is what Lara Croft will look like in everything now.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. And I think the character has a lot more stories to tell. We've never seen like an older, wiser, because obviously sex sells. People want the character to look young and attractive. But I feel like these other types of characters, whether it's Uncharted or Indiana Jones, you get to see them kind of age and have family stories to tell. I think there's a lot you could still do with the character. Now, speaking on behalf of her being a sexual icon too, you people out there making these PC mods for Lara Croft.
Not going
to
get...
This was a thing back on in some of the older games, and still they try to mod it. Come on, guys. I mean, does that enhance the gameplay?
I guess for some. I guess for some, that was like the thing that everyone would talk about. It's like, yeah. Oh, did you get the nude code?
Did you get the nude mod for Tomb Raider?
It didn't work. That's not real. It didn't exist, you liars. No, yeah, someone did something on like their own version of the PC version of this game, but like none of that was officially sanctioned.
No.
So anyone who said that was real, like, come on, guys. Come on.
I mean, these days there's nude mods of anything. I think there's like a nude mod of Mario Odyssey. So
hey, it's like, listen, man, hey, listen, whatever floats people's boat. I'm not here to judge.
As long as Thomas the Tank keeps his clothes on.
Does he have clothes?
He's now I'm thinking.
He's a train.
Now you got me thinking, Mike.
I know. he's a train with a face, which is weird. But I will say this. I would love to see like a 30 something Lara Croft at this point. I think what makes Nathan Drake so compelling as a character is that like he's a 30 or 40 something year old man.
Yeah.
And like that's great.
And you know, you see his relationships and his significant others and that's sort of the fun of it. And I think to give her more of that, maybe like you said, in her 30s or maybe her 40s could be fun. Have there ever been a story where she's had a child and there's a kid involved? Like this,
I don't know.
Everyone gets to that point.
You could go that way. Even Nathan Drake by the end has a kid, right? You could go that way. I don't know if they would. I would just like to see, give her some years. Give me a Lara Croft in her late 30s.
We don't need Granny Croft. I mean, we don't need that.
No, but like, yeah, let's see what she's like after 15 years of doing this. I think that could be really cool. And I think it's really interesting. We have Samus to look up to always as like, she's the experienced bounty hunter who's been at it for a long time. She has a history. She has entanglements and enemies and stuff like that. And so does Lara Croft, especially now in the game. So I think that's a really cool thing. They've always done a little bit of supernatural stuff too with her in the new games, which I also like because it's very Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of the compelling part of the original Indiana Jones is that Harrison Ford's like in his 40s when he's making those movies. So yeah, let's do it. Let's get a late 30s, early 40s Lara Croft in there complaining about lower back pain.
So that is our game for this episode, another episode in the books from me and Mike. Add Tomb Raider into the Hall of Fame. I can't imagine, I don't know, maybe something from the reboot series maybe we could talk about, but I think this might be as much as far as the classic series is concerned that we'll be talking about.
I would like, yeah, I think you're right. I think the reboot series would actually be really cool to kind of tackle in one sweep because I think they're all very similar, even though
I've played a couple hours of the first only, and it's a very good game, and we can argue semantics. Is it a Hall of Fame level game? It doesn't meet the criteria, but I know it's got a lot of fans out there, and it is of high quality.
Yeah, the first one's of high quality. The second one's also very, very good. The third one, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, is also very, very good.
Heard it's the weakest, though, of
but
the
it
three.
Is probably the weak link there, yeah. I actually like the Tomb Raider games, the new ones. I love Uncharted. Like I love the Uncharted games, but there are points aspects of the new Tomb Raider games that I actually prefer.
Look at that.
There's always something.
So Mike, thank you very much as always for joining us here on the Hall of Fame podcast. Where could people out there find you?
Yeah, you can find me here on the Hall of Fame video game podcast every other week with Matt, who does an incredible job putting the show together. You can find me with my band, Bad Mary. That is badmary.com or at Bad Mary Band all over the internet. You can find me on my other podcast, the Batman Tasticast. We're just about ready to wrap season one of Batman, the animated series. So check that out. And you can find me with Long Island Retro Gaming. We have the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo running from August 9th. Through the 11th of 2024. Get your tickets now at longislandretrogaming.com or search out LI Retro.
Awesome stuff. And I do want to thank the listeners. Our last episode, the top Final Fantasy games from both myself and Mike, the ratings spiked and we had double the listeners of our average episode. So obviously we either got some new listeners or you guys really enjoyed the content that we had. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Keep listening. Go back and listen to the other 154 episodes we have.
But who's counting?
No, I'm me. But no, definitely. I appreciate
that. We have plenty more Hall of Fame games to talk about and some other remasters as well that we have to go back and do due diligence for.
Yeah, no. So we got some games. We got to pick up the slack on like Halo, for example.
And I believe Next episode, me and Mike are working on something special. So you guys will tune in. Yes. You'll hear something a little different, but something that we feel needs to be discussed.
Hey, listen, the Final Fantasy episode was a format breaker. People like it. So let's do it.
Absolutely. So thank you guys, as always. Play all those video games, and we'll see you guys all next time.
See you real soon.
From Mike and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Game Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.